Public Media WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3 Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
The Intercultural Friendship Foundation is a Muslim organization with members, I guess it was started mainly with Muslim students from Turkey, is that correct?
Yes.
And we have two guests with us in our studio, Melikan Tanuri and Sherzad Madrahimov. Melikan, let's start with you. How long have you been involved with IFF, the Intercultural Friendship Foundation?
I've been here since May 2006, and short after I arrived to Urbana-Champaign, I got involved and volunteered for the activities and organization.
And what are you studying here at the university?
I'm working as a postdoc associate at the Department of Chemical and Biomolecular Engineering. I worked as a postdoc also at the physics department during my first 2 years, and then now I switched gears and doing a second postdoc.
And where did you get your PhD?
I spent 6 years at the University of California, Davis.
At Davis?
Mm-hmm.
UC Davis.
Yes.
And before that, where were you?
I had my undergrad degree in physics back in Istanbul, at Boğaziçi University.
And Sherzad, what are you studying here at the university?
I'm doing my PhD in chemistry. And I'm in the beginning, I would say I'm in the end of my third year.
Okay.
Almost in my fourth year.
And where were you before coming here for your PhD?
I did master's in University of Huntsville in Alabama. Before that, I was back in Uzbekistan, Tashkent Institute of Chemical Technology, if it does tell you anything.
All right, I'm sure Uzbeks would know.
Yeah.
And you're the president of the Intercultural Friendship Foundation for next year, I understand.
Yes, that's right.
And how long have you been involved with the organization here at the University of Illinois campus?
Since I first came here. So in your introduction, you said the organization is basically mostly a Muslim organization, but this is not limited only to Muslims. If anybody else would like to join us, we would be more than happy to accept them to work with them. But mostly we consist of the Muslim people, mostly from Turkey.
Yes.
And actually there are some people from Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan. So these are all Turkic-speaking countries. So we speak a very close language, and I actually can speak Turkish as well.
So we
don't have any problem communicating.
And both of you happen to be Muslims, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Okay. And what attracted you, Sherzad, to this organization?
So, people who make up this organization are I would say, in Islamic way, more conservative people.
Okay.
Not as you understand, I don't know, like extremely thinking. Yeah,
not politically,
but conservative in the ways that following the rules of the religion and. Being conservative, I actually need somebody to be friendly towards others. You know, religions wants us that. So, like, being conservative, you're more friendly. And we want to, I would say, show the, what can I say? I think it's not correct to say better face of Islam, but probably the true face of Islam.
Uh-huh.
By explaining what our religion stands for and being... a different voice that comes from, I would say our ethnicity, being Turkic people and also being the conservative religious people too.
And Malakhan, I know over the years, the Intercultural Friendship Foundation has made a big effort to communicate, to be in dialogue with people of other faiths, with Jews and Christians and Hindus and Buddhists and
Baha'is.
Sure. Tell us a little bit about some of the programs that IFF has done here at the University of Illinois to achieve those kind of goals.
Mm-hmm. Most of the programs involve, we basically try to reach out to different organizations on campus. I am also the vice president of the Religious Workers Association on campus. So the IFF members and also in general in IFF tries to reach out to almost all religious and cultural organizations on campus and also in the community and organize common events that brings us to, around a common point. For example, we organized dinners, lectures, seminar series, every year, and also to better understand each other, we organized events around a common theme. For example, last March of 2010, we organized an event with St. John's Newman Center, and that was about the life of Mary. Peace be upon him. For Muslims, Mary is also an important figure in our religion.
This is Mary, the mother of Jesus.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. So we organized an event with them around a dinner table, and we there were presentations about Mother Mary, both from the Muslim perspective and the Catholic perspective. And then there was continuing discussion at the tables, and we organized such events with different organizations on campus. For example, we organized a dialogue series event that happened for the third year this spring. So every spring for the past 3 years, we have been organizing interreligious dialogue series, and we form a panel of people from different religions, Christian, Muslim, Jewish, Hindu, Buddhist, and then we discuss issues of faith. Every panelist have 5 minutes to present their viewpoint.
A limited amount of time.
Yes, quite limited. And then we host the event at different locations as well, so that we have a diverse audience.
So you might have one of these dialogue panel discussions at the mosque, but it may well be at a church or a synagogue.
Yes. Actually, we Unitarian Universalist Church, Reverend Axel Gehrman there is, and the church in general are quite generous to offer the hosting for the events for the past 3 years. So we have been actually co-organizing the event with them.
With the Unitarian Church on Green Street in Urbana, yes.
Yes, yes. Okay. So the event has been hosted there. We also had YMCA and McKinley Presbyterian. So we used in different places to hold the event, and each of them were quite informing and educational for both IFF members and also other people attending.
Let me give the phone numbers for listeners who'd like to ask a question or make a comment. Here in Champaign-Urbana, where the program originates, in the studios of WILL, 333-9455. We'll connect you with our technical director, Kyle Kroa, and she will get you on the air very quickly with our guests today. If you're listening and it's a long-distance call, use 1-800-222-9455. And that's true anywhere in the continental U.S. where you're listening, perhaps on your computer. And, of course, you can get that always at will.illinois.edu and then click on AM when you're given the choice AM, FM, or TV, and you'll hear this program live. And, of course, our programs are archived at that same website. This one will be up in about a week or two, and you can listen at your convenience if you can't hear all of the program live today. So, again, the number is 1-800-222-9455 if it's a long-distance call. Otherwise, if you're in the Champaign-Urbana listening area, 333-9455. And again, Melikon and Sherzad from the Intercultural Friendship Foundation will be happy to respond to comments or questions live today here on Keeping the Faith. Let's talk a little bit about what some of these dialogue, what some of the issues are that you ask these representatives of different religions to talk about in 5 minutes. They really have to concentrate and think of what's most important since they have a very limited time at the beginning. Of course, they have many questions, but tell us what a typical a topic might be. Yeah, share that.
A typical topic would be something like the God in the religion.
Ideas about God.
Yes, uh-huh. For example, right. Or the daily rituals.
Okay.
For example,
uh-huh.
Or what people do when somebody is born, dies, or during their life when they get married and
sure.
This kind of stuff.
Okay.
So each speaker would have 5 minutes, but they have a longer time to prepare for it. So I think it's good that they have only 5 minutes because they try to put in the punchlines, the most important things into this. And it's really very informative, really very informative.
We have a caller already on line number one from Urbana. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
Merhaba, arkadaşlar.
Merhaba.
Are either of you gentlemen followers of or affiliated with Fethullah Gulen?
Yes. In general, IFF, Intercultural Friendship Foundation, has members that admire the work of Fethullah Gulen and also the Gulen movement. Yes.
Could you talk a little bit about what that is?
Yes. Gulen movement, it's so-called the Gulen movement right now. Fethullah Gulen is an Islamic scholar who is originally from Turkey, from the eastern part of Turkey. But he currently lives in United States. He lives in Pennsylvania. And he's an Islamic scholar. In his early life he preached at the mosque, so he's a licensed preacher. And then he encouraged people to emphasize, put more emphasis and work on different sections of life. For example, the Gulen movement right now focuses on 5 different areas. The first two are quite important. One of them is the education. So the movement, the volunteers of the movement has financed and started schools all over the world. And another one is the dialogue, just like what we do here on this campus. We promote cultural and interfaith dialogue activities. And another one is business, who basically sponsors these activities. And then there's a media component to it. There are newspapers and TV stations in Turkey. And the last one is the relief organizations. So there are relief organizations who do campaigns like Salvation Army or other organizations here for humanitarian relief, both in Turkey and also away in the world.
Would you like to follow up, caller?
Yeah, that's very interesting. Thank you for I didn't know the five aspects of it. So I wonder if your local organization here then has a proselytizing element to it to encourage people to follow his teachings.
In what sense exactly? You mean
by sharing, by talking about his philosophy and encouraging people to read about it and embrace it.
Proselytizing in the sense of I would call it more like promoting it rather than proselytizing. But yeah, we do promote the work of Fethullah Gulen and also the Gulen movement, because we believe that this will make a positive change both in local communities and also around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would say yeah, we do promote these teachings and these values.
Thanks very much for the information.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
Appreciate the call. Is there a political arm of the Gulen movement? I know some of the criticisms that go around on the internet say that the current government in Turkey is heavily influenced by Fethullah Gulen. Is that an issue?
Maybe I should answer it since I'm from Turkey.
Okay.
The followers are cited to be reaching millions right now. So as you can imagine, any minority group, you know, reaching millions in a country would be considered as a political figure or political force by the politicians. However, both the Gulen's teachings and the movement actually does not have intentions to get into politics or try to be a political figure in that sense. They would have their, you know, people in the movement would have their own views of life and their own political, arguments, I would say. However, as far as I know, the movement itself has not endorsed any candidate, nor supported a specific party in that sense. They are more, I would say, principle and policy oriented rather than being party oriented.
One more follow up to that caller's question: the current Turkish constitution says that Turkey is a secular state.
Yes.
The Gulen movement is clearly Muslim. Mm-hmm. Is there a religious intention to change the constitution?
That's always always the question for any Muslim country in the Middle East, I would say. There's always a concern whether which country will be the next Iran, etc. But those are I think it's quite clear that if people read the teachings of Gulen itself and then look at the actions of what the movement does, it's hard to so the Gulen movement definitely does not have any intention towards that one or any I would say actions. If you are talking about politically, if the governing party right now has any intentions to do so, I personally believe that there's no such intention that I can see. However, it's a controversial issue.
Yes.
If you ask another person from Turkey, he or she might not agree with me. But as far as I see, that's not a concern at all. Turkey has been a good ally of the West and the U.S. For so long. I don't see that being changed in the time course of probably my life. I guess.
Sherzad, you come from Uzbekistan, as you were telling us earlier. Is Uzbekistan an official Muslim country?
No. It's the constitution is almost, I think, same as the religion is separated from the state.
Okay.
So.
But it's by it's a very large majority.
Yeah, the large majority in Uzbekistan is, are Muslims.
Uh-huh.
The minorities are, you know, it's the former Soviet Union country, so we have a large minority of Russians.
Yes.
And other nationalities that made up the former Soviet Union.
And does your constitution allow freedom of religious practice for
yes.
Christians, Jews, whatever?
Yeah, it does.
Oh, uh-huh. Okay.
Maybe you have heard there were some clashes
yes.
in Kyrgyzstan between ethnic Uzbeks
right.
and Kyrgyz majority. But I think we shouldn't touch that because since this is a...
Another topic, topic yes.
Yeah.
A very large topic. Let me give the phone numbers again for callers who'd like to join this conversation in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. And again, our guests today are two graduate, well, one postgraduate student, postdoc, as that we say in the academic world. Melikon is a postdoc in chemical and biological engineering after a PhD at University of California, Davis. And Sherzad is currently working on his PhD in chemistry here at the University of Illinois. But both are very active in the Intercultural Friendship Foundation, which we're discussing today. And I see we have another caller, this time in Champaign on line one. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I am curious. I have learned in the course of the last couple of years that there are almost as many varieties of Muslims as there are varieties of Christians. So I'm wondering what your relationship is and your organization's relationship is with the more liberal part of the people in Turkey that are still Muslim, of course.
Now, what do you mean by liberal, since that can have a political meaning, religious?
You take that as you will. I don't, it seems so intertwined that I can't separate
okay.
them.
Okay. Well, let our guests respond. Go ahead.
Okay. I'll respond first, and then maybe Sherzad can comment on it as well. If you ask me about conservatism and liberalism in terms of the these terms being used in U.S., as Sherzad mentioned, I can say I'm conservative in terms of religion. I try to practice the religion. However, I also admire liberals in this country in many aspects in terms of freedom issues and social justice issues. And IFF is involved with both types of organizations in the community and on campus. So that would be my response, I guess.
So I guess I was the one who used the word conservative first. So the way I used it was not in the way the conservative is understood in this country. So if you're asking about liberals, Muslim liberals as people, let's say, who don't pray five times a day, don't fast during Ramadan, and let's say don't even say I begin with the name of Allah before they eat or before
right.
they do something.
Right, exactly.
So it is their choice. You know, there is no forcing in religion. I think this is from Quran.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't force them. We can say that, okay, doing this is right. If you're concerned about your afterlife, then and if you believe in Islam, then you should do these things. But it's your choice. Again, we can't make decisions for you. And we can't force you to do it too. So that's what I was meaning when I said conservative. People who follow the rites of Islam, but in terms of our relationship with the liberals, I think everybody has to have the freedom of choice. And that's, again, there is no forcing in religion. There is no forcing. There should not be any forcing in anything, in my opinion. So I'm closer to liberals in that standpoint, if you can understand.
I understand
in
perfectly.
In this country.
Yeah. Well, I am currently living with two Muslim folks who are not the same, shall we say?
No.
So I am getting more and more acquainted with differences.
Okay.
Anyway, I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
And yet, people like yourselves who would describe your religious practice as very faithful to the traditional Muslim practices. You would not say that someone who isn't as faithful is not a Muslim if they
no
if they
not at all.
Yeah.
I think Sherzad can comment on this as well. But yeah, definitely, you can't. I don't know whether it's the right term, but you wouldn't be playing God in that sense. I mean, only God would know who is a sincere Muslim or not. So in that sense, you wouldn't be judging. If you're the judge, just be a judge for yourself and then not, you know, no one else.
And that's a good traditional Muslim teaching.
Definitely, yes, definitely. Yeah.
We have another call, line number two, also from Champaign. Go ahead.
Okay. I appreciated hearing that you care about choices. I was just wondering, if your organization got a stronghold in Turkey, would it be your preference that women then would be, you know, covered up? Or would they have a choice, really, if you really got a stronghold there? So I'd like an answer to that.
In Turkey, you mean, or in?
Pardon?
You mean if we get if we have a stronghold in Turkey, would we be forcing people to cover up?
You would not be forcing people.
Okay. So I don't know about Turkey, but I can give you an answer from IFF. IFF members, there are members, IFF members who cover who use a headscarf, and there are members who don't. So within our small organization, we have that diversity. So I think that would reflect to, if you scale it up, I don't know, but yeah, that would be that's the case for our organization.
Well, isn't there somebody there that does know something about Turkey and... And is the intention not to get the majority of people believing in your way and not have it be a secular country?
Turkey is a secular country at the moment.
At the moment. Yes.
And it's not, I don't foresee, as it was mentioned at the beginning, I don't see any intentions nor... like an inclination towards going, diverging from West and being closer to, possibly Iran or being like Iran. I don't see that happening in the near future.
In the near future. Okay,
yes.
Then let me put it a little more personally. Mm-hmm. Would it be your preference? That women were covered.
So it's a personal choice.
No, would it be? That's not what I asked. Would it be your preference that women were covered?
I would care about. Let's put it this way. I would want. I mean, my wife. I'm married, and my wife wears a headscarf.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, I would prefer that my wife would wear a headscarf, and before we got married, she had a headscarf, and
that had been her choice before.
Yes,
you were married.
Yes, it was her choice, and I was happy with that choice, but if you ask me about someone else, I have no intention to ask anyone or force anyone to do something for their, which would be a choice that they would make for their religion. So
Shahrzad, are you married?
Yes, I am married. And actually, this is a really good question. I would like to thank the caller for this question because this is one of the issues that we want to address. This is the core of our organization that we want to answer those questions. So, what is the essence of Islam? So when the Muslims come to the power, let's say in Turkey or in any other country in the world, they make everybody, all of the women, to wear hijab and to burn all of the books that are, let's say, not Quran, and go back to the Middle Ages. So like I said, this is the personal choice of a person, and there is a ruling that the God has told us, as we believe. So in Quran it says that the women should wear hijab, but again, one cannot force another person to do the rituals of Islam. It can be promoted. It can be said it is good to do. It's good for your afterlife. But politically, banning somebody from not wearing hijab or making somebody wear hijab, I guess I said the same thing, but it's not right. For example, in Turkey, the opposite right now happens. So women cannot go to school or to public, I would say, to the universities mostly, wearing hijab. So
also government, government offices, they are not allowed with the hijab. Most of the conservative people basically make an effort to change that so that it's free, like in the Western states and U.S. So they are basically asking for that right, and the intention here is not to force people to wear headscarves. So it's the opposite. If you call it an oppression, the oppression is on the opposite side, rather than being in the people who don't follow
religious rules. Is that true in Uzbekistan as well?
So it's a little bit more complicated in Uzbekistan.
All right.
So you can look up over the internet, and I would I don't think I could answer the question.
Okay. I mean,
let our caller see if she has a follow-up question.
I really do.
Yes.
And it's on the issue of choice. It's interesting at what point the woman has a choice. Would you agree, perhaps, that it was men who wrote the text and wrote the laws? And do you ever know of any religion where a woman put forth the proposition that she had to be covered from head to toe or wear wigs or do anything of that nature? Is it your understanding, as it is mine, that men wrote it and then some kind of idea has been perpetrated on her that it's her choice? Well, did she make the original choice of text?
So, from my point of view,
yes, sure. As I was speaking, go ahead.
The woman's body is basically much more beautiful than the man's body. For example, I can take out my shirt and go out in the street, right? And probably here that wouldn't be a problem, but any other woman would not even at this time take off her shirt. Shirt, let's say, and go out in the street. So it wouldn't be. So the ethics of the woman's attire have been in all of the religions. Maybe you can say somebody has wrote it, men wrote it, but it has been more strict on women just because of their nature.
Of their nature. What do you mean?
Because of the nature of women, they have a more beautiful body, and I would say when they. That's the
In other words, it's not the nature of men who are unable to control themselves or to not be jealous of their women or whatever and who have covered them from head to toe. It's the nature of a woman. Are you kidding me?
So this is a good point. I agree with you. So the man also has the responsibility of controlling himself. That's right. Men, all of the men have the responsibility. But the point of writing something, you know, writing the texts, be it the Jewish texts or Christian or Islamic, I do not completely agree with you. So the people who believe in the religions, they think that they are divinely. So I understand your concern, but
I don't really think you understand my concern. But I do think it's of great comfort to all you men in all these religions that do things to women that keep them subservient and keep them covered up, while you have ways of convincing them, because I think that you scare them. I think you scare them. And then they have to comply. And it's not right. It is time for men to grow up and stop hiding whatever it is under the guise of religion that keeps women in a lower place. It is time. It is time. All over the world, whether you call yourself Muslim, Jews, Christians, I don't care. It is time for women to be as magnificent as they are. And because you men are afraid of them does not give you the right to keep them hidden. It is wrong. And you need to abolish that. That is, we've had it. So that's what I have to say.
Thank you for your comment.
Okay.
And I'll remind our listeners that we have had Muslim women on this program several times, and if you'd like to hear their attitudes towards their choices of wearing covering or not, you may go to those archival programs. Mm-hmm. And we may even have Muslim women today who would like to call in and say why they choose to or not to cover. But at the moment, we have another caller on line number one. Yes, go ahead. Line number one.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm curious to know, given your comments earlier, both of you, about choice and your aversion to coercing women to wear the hijab or not to wear the hijab. Do you disagree with the current Iranian state's policy to force women to wear the hijab? I'm thinking in particular of NEDA, N-E-D-A. I assume you know something about this very famous young lady in Iran who was shot during the protest movement in Tehran about a year ago, I think. And when she went to study Islamic philosophy at a Muslim university in Iran, she was told by women, not men, who were gatekeepers, as there seemed to be at so many government institutions, to dress down and put on the hijab. And that coercive policy still exists in Iran today. Given the complicated political relations between Turkey and Iran, as we all seen in the news, would you or would you not agree that that Iranian coercive policy towards women is unjustified?
I'm happy that the next caller also asked a similar question. I wanted to have two comments on this issue. One is the first caller actually insisted on that women who wear hijab, they were forced to do so. I think that's underestimating those women and their, you know, their conscience and their self-esteem. Because I wish my wife could call in and tell her point of view, but there's no compulsion or restriction upon them. I know personally.
If I could interrupt, I understand yes. That's the case mm-hmm. in Turkey, but apparently it's not the case
yes.
in Iran, particularly in government institutions.
Okay. So my second comment will be about that. The second comment is, if you force people to follow a certain religion's rules, you create not the followers of that religion, but you rather create hypocrites. So if the purpose here is to make that person more religious or be a more pious Muslim, you have to convince. I mean, this is not, we are not in the 1500s or, you know, 1200s where people convince each other by war or by killing each other or by beating each other. If you want to convince a person, just tell him what you think, and then he or she will accept it or not. If you force them, then they may say okay for the sake of their safety or position. However, you will not reach your goal, which is to make that person more pious or more religiously observant. So forcing people does not help making an Islamic state in that sense.
So if, you would see the Iran policies as being counterproductive.
I mean, I don't want to talk about Iran specifically since I'm not Iranian. People might be offended about that and they might have their own point of view. But what I can say is there is no compulsion in religion. However, there is the text. Whether you believe it or not, whether you believe men wrote it or not, it's out there. It's your choice to believe, what's written in there or not. I mean, if you're a Muslim, the Quran is out there. Read it, and if you accept it, then follow what the teachings are. If you're a Christian, do the same for the Bible. And if you're satisfied, just be content with it and live up to the teachings. So in that sense, if you force people to follow what you think that's good for them, that's a counterproductive effort. You just build more and more hypocrites. You build more and more pressure, and that system is doomed to fail.
Just as a follow-up comment, lots of Christians need to hear the advice that you just gave. Would you agree that many Muslims need to hear the same advice?
I can't comment on that. It's just my opinion, people accept it or not.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. Let me give the numbers again, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. If it's long distance, 1-800-222-9455. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Next couple weeks, I'll be traveling. And Don Nolan, who just called in with some very good questions and comments, will be sitting in for me next week, and he'll be interviewing Dan Guillory about his most recent book, People and Places in the Land of Lincoln. Some listeners may remember I spoke with Professor Guillory from Millikan University about a earlier book about Lincoln, which was all poems, the poems of Abraham, poems generated by the life of Abraham Lincoln. So that'll be next week, the 27th of June, here, 2010, Don Nolan interviewing Dan Guillory about People and Places in the Land of Lincoln, his newest book. On July 4th, we'll be having an archive program. Paul Knitter, that's spelled K-N-I-T-T-E-R, professor at Union Theological Seminary. I was very fortunate to be able to interview him last January about his book, Without Buddha, I Could Not Be a Christian. So, Buddhism and Christianity on July 4th, an archive program with Professor Paul Knitter of Union Theological Seminary in New York City, a book that's generated quite a bit of interest this last year. But getting back to our caller, our guest today, and any callers, we do have about 10 minutes to go, and so if you 12 minutes, actually. So if you'd like to call in, we do have time for your comments or questions. We're talking about the Intercultural Friendship Foundation. And our guest today, Malakhan Tanuri, is currently the representative from that group to the Religious Workers Association at the University of Illinois, made up of many men and women here on this campus who are actively representing their own religious traditions and trying to cooperate in many ways and increase understanding among those different faiths. We know that misunderstandings and disagreements have caused many problems around the world for a long time, and so this is one of the organizations that tries to deal with some of those issues. And Malakhan is the current, recently elected vice president of the Religious Workers Association, which has a long and rich history here at the University of Illinois. Our other guest is the new president of the Intercultural Friendship Foundation, IFF, Sherzad. Say your last name for me again.
Madrahimov.
That's spelled Madrahimov. Okay? At least the English spelling. Okay. our two guests are talking about some of the programs of the IFF. What do you have coming up for the fall? What are you planning for this next school year?
Yeah. We have two programs that are coming up, which I personally find interesting. One of them is an art and essay contest. We will be organizing an art and essay contest for the middle and high school students in Champaign and Urbana School District. This is not the first contest that we organized. We have been organizing writing contests for the past 3 years, changing back and forth between the undergrads on campus and also the high schoolers. But this will take place between August 20th and October 5th. And the topic would be civilizations and the environment. So we picked that topic after this oil spill.
This
is open to middle and high school students, and it will be separate. So there's an art contest, and then there will be a writing contest, so art and essay contest. And the award ceremony will be at the at our annual dialogue and friendship dinner, which is the second event that I would like to mention. Normally, we organize these dinners to bring people from various backgrounds. We invite faculty, staff from campus. We invite people from city officials, businessmen, and we organize these every year during the month of Ramadan. During the month of Ramadan, we fast, and then sharing the fast breaking meal is something special for the Muslims. So for the past 6 years, we have been inviting people over the dinner table and pick a common theme that we can talk about. We invite speakers. And there's an award ceremony as well. This year, the speakers will be Dr. Ali Yurtsever. He's the director of American Islamic College in Chicago. And the second speaker will be Sister Janice Keenan. And we will be presenting her with our Peace and Dialogue Award this year.
She is a Catholic nun?
Yes, she's a Catholic nun at St. John's Newman Center. We are going to add two more awards this year. So there will be three awards that we will be presenting. Starting this year, we will be also presenting a Community Service Award. We plan to We are going to present it to Mei Cao, of the assistant director at the Asian American Cultural Center. And the third award will be the Campus Achievement Award, and that would go to Interfaith in Action. That's a registered student organization on campus, which has a similar mission and vision as IFF, Interfaith in Action. We think they have done a really good job in putting a program for helping Haiti. So they recently
spearheaded the million meals for Haiti,
yes,
along with the Salvation Army. Yes.
Yeah, so we would like to acknowledge their effort in putting that together as well. This dinner will be on October 20th at the Ilnoke Hotel and Conference Center. During the past 6 years, we had around 200 guests. So we hope to maintain that and have around 200 guests.
Let me give the phone numbers again for people who might like to ask a question of our guests. 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455 if it's a long-distance call. I regret that I won't be able to attend the dinner this year. I've enjoyed them in the past, but my wife and I have plans to be traveling during that time. But I can certainly recommend the dinner to people who would like to attend and who are close enough here to Champaign-Urbana to come and do that. If they'd like information on attending, is there a website?
Yes, we have a website. It's ifffillinois.org. It's www.ifffillinois.org.
Very good. Tell me a little bit about your experience as a Muslim. Did each of you grow up in a Islamic family, or are you a convert?
So when I was born, Uzbekistan was part of the Soviet Union, and you know the state was religious-less.
There was no religion allowed. Yes.
Yes. I can't say I grew up in a very Muslim family, but I can remember the years at the end of the 80s, when the 89, 90, when Gorbachev started his political changes, my family, my father and mother, they would start fasting. And later on, I would say it picked up because the people were not allowed to practice their religion for a long time, and there was some kind of need among people for that, so it picked up.
And how long had the communist policies been there that were anti-religious in your particular country?
From 17 to 91.
Yeah. Several generations.
Yeah, a couple of generations, basically.
Uh-huh. We do have another caller. Let's try to get someone in quickly with a short question, perhaps. Line number one, Champaign.
Hello. I this is a short question.
Yes.
Are there books that you could recommend that you feel enlarge understanding of your religious and cultural traditions? I really enjoy reading, and I would love to know if there are books actually written in English, obviously, that you could suggest.
Thank you for the question.
Yeah, I can recommend. Of course, you can always pick up a copy of Quran. You can order it on Amazon and read it. And there's a good book on the life of Prophet Muhammad as well, by Martin Lings. It's Lings, Martin Lings. That's also a good biography of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. If you would like to learn more about the Gulen movement, the specific movement in Turkey, I can can also recommend a recent book which came out by Helen Rose Ebaugh. It's E-B-A-U-G-H, Helen Rose Ebaugh. She's from the Department of Sociology at the University of Houston, and she wrote a book on the Gulen movement, a sociological analysis of the civic movement rooted in moderate Islam. So that's the title of the book, and it's available on Amazon.
And my field of study has been religions, world religions. My degree is from Duke. And one very accessible book has been for a number of years, books on the history of world religions by Houston Smith. And there's a one that's just been out a few years. I think it came out in 06, the Illustrated World Religions. Very readable, and it covers not only Islam very, very fairly, but the other major world religions as well. And it's in paperback as well as hardback.
I can recommend the translation of the Quran by Yusuf Ali. It's Y-U-S-U-F and then A-L-I, Yusuf Ali. That's deemed to be a good translation of the Quran into English.
An English translation, very good. Thank you for that call. Well, we're down to our last minute or so. Any last words about IFF?
So we would like to encourage our listeners to come attend our programs and to visit our website because what we do is dedicated to service the public and also service our religion and other people as well, so that they have a good understanding, a fair understanding about our religion and also the other religions. Because in our talks, not only Muslims speak, we invite Buddhists, Jews, and other people as well. So I would encourage them to come and attend our meetings.
And particularly your events that are dialogues and panels, there's always time for many questions.
Yes.
And people can ask one another questions on the panels, and there's always time for listeners, for people who attend these meetings to ask questions. And then there's a variety of responses, not just two folks that we can fit into our studio, but all sorts of folks. And in terms of the variety of Islam, it's interesting hearing different comments. And at this university, of course, we're very fortunate to have people from many different countries who represent the over 1 billion Muslims in the U.S., in the world, excuse me. Again, Steve Shoemaker, I want to thank our guests for being with us today, talking
thank
about
you.
The Intercultural Friendship Foundation. Next week, Don Nolan will be interviewing Don Guillory on his newest book, People and Places in the Land of Lincoln. And the following week, Paul Nitter, professor from Union Seminary, will be discussing Buddhism and Christianity. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580.
It's an exciting time here at WILL. The countdown to the end of our fiscal year has begun. Our goal is to gather we can reach our fundraising goal. Making your gift online is easy at willpledge.org. Our website is available around the clock.
This is Illinois Public Media WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3 Urbana.